Very few mediums, and no psychic surgeons that I know of in Brazil, work entirely on their own. They tend to be surrounded by a group of helpers, on whom the mediums depend to a great extent to tell them what they do while they are in trance. If they are genuine, or if at least if they were to start with, trance mediums' only sources of reliable information about their own work are those present during the trance state. To be able to assemble such a group in the first place, it seems probable that a medium must at some time have shown genuine gifts, for it cannot be easy to begin as a deliberate fraud from scratch. Thus mediums will gradually come to know what is expected of them, and feel obliged, even if subconsciously, to provide the phenomena their customers or patients have come to see. Then comes the day when they find they have not got the necessary power. Now if this happened to a concert pianist, for instance, there would be nothing for it but to cancel the concert. You cannot very well pretend to play a piano concerto if you have forgotten it. Yet the medium can pretend to be a medium, knowing that there is a good chance nobody will notice the difference, since so much of a medium's work deals with the invisible. When they have one of their bad days, they can either cheat on purpose or unconsciously, or if they are honest, they can call off the session altogether. If there are 200 or 300 people waiting to see them, perhaps people who have made a contribution to the center where they work, they may feel obliged to perform just to satisfy their audience, even if they know they cannot produce the genuine effects they have come to see. You too can be a psychic surgeon, if not for long. Here is how. There are many ways in which psychic surgeons can, and do, cheat. The most common, which has been observed in the Philippines but not as yet in Brazil, is to tape two small cellophane bags in the palms of your hands, one containing chicken blood and the other pure ether. You slap the hand with the blood in it on the patient's stomach, having punctured it with a tiny pin attached to your thumbnail, making a terrible mess. Then you start prodding away with your fingers, perhaps even making a cut beforehand with a blunt knife so as to leave a nice red line on the skin. Then, when you have finished operating, you burst the ether bag in your other hand and mop up the blood, most of which will appear to evaporate, helped perhaps by your assistant's casual dabs with damp cotton wool. A far easier way of cheating for beginners is to claim that you are only going to operate on the paraspirit body, or in the astral plane. Here, all you have to do is wave your hands in the air above the body, manipulate invisible scissors, knives and other implements, muttering instructions to your unseen helpers. These, of course, will not reply, but everybody present will understand that they are on the astral plane and only you can hear them. As for diagnosis, you use the time-honored methods of muscle reading and fishing. Chances are your patients have something wrong in the stomach area, so you simply prod around here and write out a prescription for anything you like, preferably something totally harmless. Assure your patients that your spirit guides will slip something into the medicine to make it work better, slap them on the back and order God to be with them. You may find that some will actually get better. If you come up against a really tough case, you always have karma to fall back on. Supposing an attractive young lady comes up and says, "Oh, Dr. Wu, that's your spirit guide, I'm desperate. I've got cancer of the uterus, colon, stomach, lungs, neck, nose and big toe. I've been given 3 weeks to live. Help." In cases like this you prod her around a little, look at the ceiling, cock your ear to the voice of your invisible mentor and reply, "Yes, my dear sister. Your problem is one of karma. In your past incarnation you were a prison guard in Siberia, and before that you were one of the assistants who threw Christians to the lions in Rome. Before that you were a mass murderer in Atlantis, and in the Mesolithic age you were a child rapist. In this lifetime, you have been given a great chance to pay off all your past debts at once. God is good. Next patient, please. This will never fail. Karma is karma, and with luck your patient will obediently go away and die, convinced she is doing herself a favor. Your spiritual wisdom and understanding will be widely praised, especially if you murmur a prayer for the girl's soul and wish it better luck next time round. In general, would-be psychic surgeons must remember the cardinal rules of conjuring: don't tell your audience what you are going to do, and never try the same trick twice on the same evening. But there is something else amateur surgeons must do, namely, bring off some genuine cures now and then, otherwise they will be out of business, for the only way they can advertise is by word of mouth. They are also warned that sooner or later somebody will try to film them at work, or bring along a real doctor to watch. When that happens, they had better say their guides are taking the evening off, and do likewise themselves. A very serious warning must be given here to would-be patients. Although Brazil welcomes tourists, there are two very good reasons why foreigners suffering from serious diseases should not go there in search of help. One is that Brazil, like many countries, has strict immigration laws, and will not issue a visa to anybody who is dangerously ill. The other is that alternative healing is widely practiced in many other countries, especially Britain and the US, so readers from those areas are advised to seek out their own local healers instead of adding themselves to the long waiting lists of Brazil's already overburdened psychics. There is no indication whatever that Brazilian healers can do anything that reputable healers in other countries cannot also do, they just use different methods. Another point to consider is that since the persecution and imprisonment of Arigatilda Cubed, there has been a tendency for psychic surgeons to try to remain anonymous, avoid publicity and work in near secrecy. They have in fact mostly gone underground, and it might take a newcomer months even to find one. Here then, is a short account of a few of the best known Brazilian psychic surgeons, and a longer account of my own experiences with one of them. 2. Arraiga, the small town of Congonhas do Campo, 250 miles north of Rio de Janeiro in the state of Minas Gerais, is famous throughout Brazil for two very different reasons. It contains some of the finest work of the crippled sculptor known as Ali Jadino, whose real name was Antonio Francisco Lisboa, 1738-1814. Tourists and pilgrims still flock to see his dramatic group of prophets, carved from the local soapstone, that stands on the terrace of the Church of Bom Jesus de Matis in Hoes, a masterpiece of Brazilian Baroque architecture that was built in 1773. The other tourist attraction is, or was, the Centro Espírita Jesus Nazareno a few blocks downhill from the church, a modest spiritist center like thousands of others all over the country that attracted up to 1,000 visitors a day who used to come in hopes of seeing the resident healing medium, a simple and friendly fellow called José Pedro de Freitas, better known by the nickname Arigatilda Cubed, a sort of Brazilian equivalent of Johnny Appleseed. Arigatilda Cubed was only 49 years old when he died in a head-on collision in January 1971. In his relatively short career as a psychic consultant and surgeon, he had attended to an estimated 2 million people from all walks of life, including a member of a president of the Republic's own family, several distinguished personalities from the entertainment and political worlds, and countless and mostly anonymous ordinary men and women who helped give him the reputation of being the world's leading practitioner of his peculiar art. With the exception of Chico Xavier, no Brazilian medium has ever been more of a public figure than Arigatilda Cubed. At least 6 books have been written about him, in addition to countless newspaper and magazine articles. His unbelievable feats with a terrifying assortment of kitchen knives and rusty pairs of scissors were witnessed at point-blank range by some of the country's leading doctors, and fortunately for posterity he became the first and only Brazilian medium to undergo anything like a serious scrutiny by a qualified scientist. This was not a Brazilian, but a visiting American. Dr. Andrea Puharich, one of the few psi researchers of recent times who was prepared to go hunting in the field for interesting cases. Arigatilda Cubed always worked in public, under normal lighting conditions and in full view of whoever happened to have filed into the center to await their turn for consultation or treatment. When doctors were present, he would see they had a good view and often let them stand next to him and even hold the patient's head in their hands, chatting away in the German accent of his supposed spirit guide Dr. Fritz. He would often come out with medical language scarcely to be expected from a barely literate son of Congonhas do Campo. He was never accused of fraud by anybody who had actually seen him at work, and it is unlikely that any other Brazilian medium will ever offer such opportunities for research again, opportunities only an American was enterprising enough to grasp. José Pedro de Freitas was born on October 18, 1921 on the modest farm of his parents near Congonhas do Campo, the first of a family of 10. He worked in the fields as a child, managing to get through only 3 years of primary school by way of formal education, after which he could barely read or write. Later, he spent some 6 years working as a miner of iron ore, after an unsuccessful attempt to run a bar and restaurant, which failed due to Arigatilda Cube's willingness to sell food and drink on credit. During his time as a miner, he won a reputation as a labor organizer and was accused of having communist sympathies, as was then standard practice in Brazil when anybody showed concern for the conditions of the poor. He made some political enemies at this time, some of whom later tried without success to discredit him as a healer, even threatening to kill him. In 1942, Arigatilda Cube married his cousin Arlete Soares, who gave him 6 children, and for about 14 years he held down a regular job in the local pensions office, working from midday to 6 in the evening. Accounts of the first manifestations of his mediumship differ widely. Brazilian writers tend to have a horror of such things as dates, place names, witnesses or indeed any form of concrete fact, but what seems known for certain is that in 1956 a well-known senator named Lucio Bittencourt announced in public that he had been operated on by Arigatilda Cube in a room at the Hotel Itaciaia in Belo Horizonte, the capital of Minas Gerais. Since both the senator and Arigatilda Cube appeared to have been asleep at the time, it is not clear just what happened, though Bittencourt said he had been suffering from a tumor of the lung, which was certainly not there when he went back to his doctor for x-rays. Arigatilda Cube later told the writer J. Herculano Baez, one of the few Brazilian parapsychologists ever to have attempted original research of any kind, that he recalled nothing whatsoever of this incident, and that at the time he had been a devout Catholic with a horror of any form of spiritism, from which he had fled like the devil from the cross. 1. He did, however, claim that since childhood he had experienced strange visions, usually of a kind of luminous cloud floating in space, and had heard voices talking to him, sometimes in what he took to be German. He had also seen his subsequent mentor, Dr. Fritz, whose first manifestation had scared him stiff. He was a monster with a huge belly and a German-looking face. Arigatilda Cube's first public performance, according to himself, as told to Pius, was an operation on the stomach of an old woman in Congonhas from which he extracted a tumor, using only a kitchen knife and his bare hands, in full view of several witnesses. This was probably also in 1956. Not surprisingly, his fame as a healer spread rapidly, and before long the whole of Brazil seemed to be beating a path to the door of the Spiritist Center that had been formed by a group of Arigatilda Cube's friends, once the medium himself had accepted his fate and gradually moved away from Catholicism to Spiritism. He managed to remain on good terms with his former church. Father Virgilio, parish priest of Congonhas who had known him since childhood, told one of Arigatilda Cube's biographers that he had always regarded him as a model of Christian charity and humane sentiments, whose main aim in life was to help his fellow men. How can we condemn him for wishing his neighbor well? The priest asked, showing tolerance seldom expressed by Catholics towards Spiritist mediums. 2. The good priest's sentiments were not shared by all. And in 1958 Arigatilda Cube had his first clash with the law of the land, under which the illegal practice of medicine was punishable, as in many countries, by a jail sentence. The Minas Gerais Medical Association managed to get him into court and sentenced to 30 months, although he was saved at the last minute by no less than the President of the Republic, Juscelino Kubitschek. Though a practicing Catholic and qualified medical doctor, Kubitschek knew his people well and was always sympathetic towards Spiritism. It was during his term of office that Brazil became the only country in the world to issue a special postage stamp to mark the 100th anniversary of the publication of Kardec's The Spirit's Book, and when one of his daughters became seriously ill, he had no hesitation in summoning Arrigate Tilda Cube to the presidential home in Copacabana to examine her. He came in and looked at her, the former president recalled in a 1972 interview, and without knowing anything about her disease said she was suffering from a serious kidney complaint and needed an immediate operation. Arrigate Tilda Cube advised the president to let his daughter go ahead with the operation that had already been arranged in the U.S., assuring him that she would be all right and that he would hold himself responsible for the result. Marcia Kubitschek duly went to the United States, had her kidney operation, and returned fully cured. All I can say is that I believed in Arrigate Tilda Cube, her father recalled. I never heard of anyone suffering under his hands. He did nothing but good. I collected evidence from thousands of people, and they all considered him charitable and kind. So I pardoned him. 3. This episode reveals the degree to which spiritist phenomena can be accepted in Brazil even when they appear to go against the law. But Arrigate Tilda Cube was less fortunate the next time the law went after him, which was in 1964, the year of the military-backed revolution that among other things deprived Kubitschek of his political rights. To their credit, successive military governments after 1964 never interfered with spiritism. Another card stamp was issued in 1969 during the extremely tough Costa e Silva administration, but they were far too busy in their first year of office to worry about the fate of Arrigate Tilda Cube. This time he did go to prison, rejecting his friend's offer of a campaign to secure another pardon from high places. Once behind bars, Arrigate Tilda Cube showed no hard feelings, only complaining of the conditions his fellow prisoners had to live in. He himself was given a number of privileges in view of his status as a national celebrity. The judge who sentenced me was only doing his duty, he told reporters who flocked to see him behind bars. We all have a mission here on earth, and mine is to heal. Indeed, at his formal sentencing, Arrigate Tilda Cube had kissed the magistrate's hand, apologized for all the trouble he had caused and reminded him that I have a job to do as well, you know. Despite his own refusal to plead for a reduction in his sentence, Arrigate Tilda Cube immediately became a cause celebre Tilda Dieresis, attracting so many visitors to the town of Conselheiro Afuaiat, where he was held, that he jokingly suggested they should build a special prison for him in Congonhas, where at least I can be near my wife and children. He referred to his prison as paradise, where he was free from all the pressures of his work at the Spiritist Center. Here, I'm a free man, he said. Some of his admirers even felt he must have done something wrong in a previous incarnation and was now being allowed to adjust his karma. Anyway, he was freed after serving 7 months and 4 days of his 16-month sentence, and his return home to Congonhas provoked wild scenes of celebration. As he quickly became re-established as the most famous surgeon in the country, he began to attract the attention of members of the profession considerably better qualified than himself. Fortunately for posterity, many of these came not to denounce him, but to study his methods with open minds. There is probably more eyewitness testimony on public record to Arrigate Tilda Cube's work than to that of any similar healer in history, and much of it comes from qualified doctors. One distinguished Brazilian surgeon who is fully satisfied with the evidence of his own eyes is Dr. Ari Lex, author of one of the standard textbooks used by Brazilian medical students, and an active member of several professional associations. When I approached him in September 1973, Dr. Lex unhesitatingly confirmed the lengthy and detailed account of his experiences with Arrigate Tilda Cube that had already been widely quoted. His evidence is of special interest in that he admitted he originally went to see Arrigate Tilda Cube in an extremely skeptical frame of mind. I was fully prepared to debunk him if necessary, he told me. But there was no trickery at all. It was the small details that really stuck in my mind, The way Armagatilda cubed would simply turn his back on the patient in the middle of an operation, the way he would just touch some blood flowing from an eye and it would stop at once, or the way he would pull an eye right out of its socket without causing a trace of pain. Dr. Lex witnessed a total of 4 operations in the space of about half an hour, during one of which he was actually holding the patient's head in his hands. The first was for the draining of a cyst on the patient's wrist, which was done without any preparation whatsoever, as in every reported operation of Armagatilda cubed's, no anesthesia, no kind of sterilization, and no hint of hypnosis or suggestion. Next came the removal of a lipoma, a benign tumor made up largely of fatty cells, from a woman's arm. While Dr. Lex held the arm, Armagatilda cubed simply rubbed the back of his knife over the skin without attempting to cut it, until the skin appeared to open of its own accord, upon which Armagatilda cubed squeezed the lipoma and brought it out intact. Dr. Lex had the presence of mind to time the operation, which took place about a foot in front of his eyes in a good light, and found the whole process took 30 seconds. He reckoned that 15 minutes would be an average time for a similar operation under conventional conditions. The third operation was the same as the second, and Dr. Lex again pointed out that he had a perfectly clear and unobstructed view. Out popped another lipoma in half a minute. I have seen the color film of a similar operation made by the Sao Paulo journalist Jorge Rini, and can fully support Dr. Lex's testimony. So could Dr. Buharich, who was himself the patient on this occasion. Next came one of Armagatilda cubed's traditional specialities, the ablation or removal of a trigium from a woman's eye. This was done with an ordinary pair of nail scissors, and when blood began to trickle from the eye, Armagatilda cubed simply dabbed at it with cotton wool and told it to stop, which it did. I have also seen this on film, and Dr. Lex assures me that he knows of no way in which the amount of blood he saw can normally be made to coagulate so quickly. What really shook Dr. Lex, and me, while watching Rini's film, was the incredible roughness, at times amounting to violence, of Armagatilda cubed's surgical techniques. He would pick up his knife, which looked like an ordinary table knife, and simply shove it under the eyeball, sometimes taking his hand away and letting it hang there. The patient would appear apprehensive, though showing no sign at all of pain. Worst of all was Armagatilda cubed's disconcerting habit of appearing to take little interest in what he was doing, frequently looking over his shoulder while poking around with somebody's eyeball half out of its socket. An important point regarding Dr. Lex's testimony is that he was himself an active spiritist and a frequent speaker at the Sao Paulo Spiritist Federation, where a favorite theme of his was the need to expose fraudulent mediums who only served to discredit the movement. He did not strike me as a man one can describe as credulous, for he had examined several other alleged medium healers and remained unimpressed by any of them. He was also sharply critical of Armagatilda cubed's prescriptions, some of which he was able to examine on the spot. They were absolutely ridiculous, he told me. Some of them were for obsolete medicines which were only still being made because he prescribed them. He mentioned one, known in Brazil as canamicina, which he considered not only obsolete but actually dangerous. He also told me that Armagatilda cubed would prescribe alarmingly large quantities of medicines, which quite apart from their possible side effects were extremely expensive. He estimated the cost of one prescription he saw as equal to about $100. Dr. Lex made an attempt to set up some sort of scientific test with Armagatilda cubed, but I was given the impression he was not interested. Future investigators are advised that they are likely to get better results with psychic surgeons when they are out of trance, when some of them are perfectly normal people. When they are entranced, they can be very different, and although in my own experience a medium in trance will stand by a promise made out of trance, the reverse is not always true. It is all very confusing, and it is only too easy for researchers of psychic surgery to give up in despair. Dr. Lex made it unmistakably clear to me that he had witnessed the reality of paranormal surgery. Armagatilda cubed was genuine. He offered me no evidence for lasting cures, and reminded me that the real significance of the work of people like Arigatilda Cubed was often misunderstood. He was sent for a mission far greater than the healing of a few bad eyes, he told me. Just what that mission was must be a matter of personal opinion, but I can only point out that after witnessing phenomena such as those described above, especially for the first time, few people are able to resist the impulse to revise their opinions of some of the greater mysteries of life. Having experienced psychic surgery myself, I am forced to take the spiritist explanation seriously, at least as a working hypothesis, if only because any other hypothesis seems even more unlikely. Many people, I suspect, would take psychic surgeons more seriously if there were strong evidence that anybody had been cured of a fatal disease by one. Such evidence is hard to find. Harry Edwards has pointed out that it is in fact almost impossible, because any patient who is considered incurable must have had some medical treatment, and if there is a recovery after paranormal healing, it will always be claimed that this was due to the medical treatment. Or, of course, the original diagnosis may have been wrong. 4. What we need is a case where full medical records were compiled, the patient was declared incurable by more than one specialist, and then made a full recovery after unorthodox healing. Here it is. This case history was given me by Dr. Jose Hortensio de Medeiros, a specialist in radiology of the heart who held several important posts in São Paulo hospitals, including that of lecturer at the State Cardiology Institute. The patient, a woman of 28, was carried into a São Paulo emergency ward one day in 1961, suffering from severe intestinal obstruction. Examinations revealed that she had two tumors in her transverse colon, one of which was blocking it completely. They were removed, sent for analysis, and found to be cancerous. Two further examinations by independent pathologists confirmed that the woman was incurable. She was given 2 months to live at the most, and for temporary relief a colostomy operation was performed to allow excretion to pass from her colon. As Dr. Medeiros was telling me the story, he suddenly grabbed my notebook and pen, and drew a diagram of a colon, indicating the site of the tumors. There were metastases all over the place, he said, drawing 15 circles around the colon. One was the size of a hen's egg. She simply hadn't a chance. Three specialists were agreed on that. Was there any possibility of spontaneous regression? I asked timidly. Dr. Medeiros snorted, as if a student had asked a particularly silly question. I wouldn't say so, he replied, before going on with his story. The woman's husband decided not to give up. He took his wife to Congonhas by air. She was too weak to travel by road, since her normal weight of 58 kilos was down to less than 30. Arigatilda Cube took one look at her and wrote out a prescription for 4 medicines, canamycina, olobintin, neurorubin and dextioxina, heavy doses of each. 2 of these, I noticed, were among the medicines Dr. Lex had condemned as either obsolete or dangerous. The patient took the medicines as ordered by Arigatilda Cubed, and began to improve at once. After only a week she had put on 10 kilos and was getting out of bed and walking around. 6 weeks later she was weighing 60 kilos, 2 kilos above her former normal weight. The woman seemed to have been cured, but she went back to Congonhas just to make sure. Arigatilda Cubed told her she had been saved, but gave her 2 more prescriptions, including gammachlorex, chloramycetin metiosila and albamycinogam, an antibiotic for the urinary passages. The latter struck Dr. Medeiros as interesting, for the blockage in the woman's colon had caused trouble in her urinary system as well. 5. Back she went for a third checkup, whereupon Arigatilda Cubed announced that she was cured. That was in August 1961. The woman who had been given 2 months to live eventually died in January 1968. She had been back to see Arigatilda Cubed shortly before her death, but the prescription he had given her was no use. The phenomenon had fallen off by then, Dr. Medeiros told me, confirming other reports I had heard to the effect that towards the end of his career Arrigay-Tilda-Cubed had lost some of his earlier powers. But there is no doubt that she lived over 6 years because of him, no doubt at all. Every detail of every stage of this case is on file at the hospitals where the woman was originally examined.